There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
Brad, where are you dialing in from? What's home base for you?
This is home base, I suppose. Right now, I'm in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Okay.
This is my apartment that has been more of a storage unit this summer. Just haven't been here, but now I'm here. So, are we recording now? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Nice. We love a cold open.
No, yeah. I'm in West Palm Beach. I've had this place for about a year. I literally slept in my bed for the first time in 2 months last night. So
wow,
super excited.
Where were you? Damn.
Well, I was in Indiana and then Wisconsin. That was the main thing. I was helping at Sedge Valley and then helped in Chicago for a little bit, then Nashville for a wedding, back to Indiana, and then here. Damn.
Considering you are just in the Midwest, you're picking a good time to be leaving the Midwest and be heading back to Florida.
I know. I was telling somebody, I haven't experienced a true fall since maybe I was 16 years old, 17 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause I went to school at Oklahoma State and they have seasons there, and then as soon as I finished at OSU, I basically moved to Florida and started playing. And then, you're hopefully playing all the time and not at home. Yeah. So
you got to bring a little bit of home with you wherever you go. Cause like you said, you hadn't had a real fall since age 16, so you got to bring that with you on the road.
That's exactly right. I felt like if I could control how I start my day, then the rest would kind of take care of itself. Just
right.
one little thing when you're traveling a lot, the cup of coffee was big.
I might have missed this, but when you're on your travels, what are you doing?
So I used to be a professional golfer. I played for about 7 years. That took me wherever. I was really lucky and fortunate to play some of the international tours, like the PGA Tour of Latin America. I spent 19 in China, did the PGA Tour of China. And then obviously we had COVID happen. And since then, that tour has kind of gone away. And then that was about the time when I got into golf. I wanted to get into golf course architecture, but didn't really know how that starts. I really knew nothing about it outside of I like to be creative. I love golf. So came back home. There's a project going on in my neighborhood, luckily. And I basically joined on as kind of an intern on that job. And then that was great for about, almost a year. I got that first kind of project. And then this summer I started working with Tom Doak's group at Renaissance Golf and helped it at Sand Valley, and then at Chicago with one of the associates named Brian Snyder. And so that's what I've been traveling for this year. And then in the middle of that, I got to go to Ireland and film a documentary, which was really, really cool and just super special, and can't wait to go back there. So
it sounds like a really cool several years. Was there a spot that you looked forward to going every year? What were some of the spots that you really enjoyed playing?
Nicaragua is beautiful, just where it sits in the world, and it's just so green, and it's right on the coast, and it rises up into these mountains, and it's just it's just gorgeous. It's just so pretty. The golf course was fine, but Buenos Aires in Argentina, there's a course called
Sick.
Jockey Club there. I look forward to that the most. In 2019, I missed back-to-back second stages, and I had to play in Dallas, and then I went over to Spain and played in that one, and I missed both of them, and it gutted me. I mean, I was toast. It sucked. I mean, because that's the one tournament that can really elevate your status for the next year, and I just bombed both of them. And but that third week they were playing just coincidentally in Argentina, the Latin tour was, and I still had a little bit of status. So I think I flew from Barcelona to Buenos Aires just to remind myself I still love to travel and play, and let's see if I'm just gonna go sling it. I have not a care in the world. I couldn't be more I want to quit narrative. And then I just let's go see if I can remind myself. And that was at the end of 2019. So, and it did exactly what I thought. I love going there.
This is really interesting, actually, because obviously the PGA Tour is the for the men's side, that's where you want to get to as a player. Obviously, it's the biggest purses, the you know, the toughest competition, all of that. But you think about where they're playing, and it's like 8 weeks out of the year you're playing in Florida, you're playing in Texas all year, you're playing in Hawaii every once in a while, California all year. It's like the Latino America tour and you know, the European tour and things like that, like, for me as a travel fan and like a fan of culture, like, those sound like so much more appealing places to actually go play and experience those places. And I guess that's part of the value add of what like LIV is, right? It's like you get to play around the world. It's more of like an F1 model. It's like a traveling circus kind of thing. Have you thought about that at all? Like, was the PGA Tour ever what you were gunning for? Was that the goal for you?
That's the singular goal. It was probably too much of a goal. I mean, that's why you make the sacrifice of leaving and going and traveling, you know, because as much as it sounds cool, there's days where you're in a hotel. Like, I missed two cuts in Brazil once and I was sitting in a hotel for 2 weeks. It's like, I was losing my mind. Like, it was terrible. And it's Brazil and it sounds, you know, cool and fun, but it's, you know, it wasn't a fun sight and I didn't want to leave the hotel. I didn't know where I was. And then on the flip side, in the summer of 2021, like early last year, before I switched into learning the golf course architecture stuff, or I guess said stop playing professionally, I was traveling in the U.S. I was like driving around to like tournaments in Georgia. They had like a little pot. It was called like the Forum Tour. And like I was back in the U.S. I was really excited to be in the U.S. So I was in Georgia. And then we went to Chicago and Indiana. And I still wasn't having like a good time. And that's when I knew like professional golf for me is a chapter that's probably passed. So it's like I was in Chicago, I was in Indiana, and I still was like, I don't feel like I'm in the right place kind of thing. So it's an interesting kind of that. And that was probably just complete burnout. Like you know, as much as I enjoy the traveling and enjoyed coming home, I think a lot of it can end up being circumstantial, as like what you're going through kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Totally. The 2 weeks spent trapped in a hotel in Brazil, that takes a little bit of the sheen off of the what I was going at.
Yeah. And I don't mean to like say it's not like we're very, you know, you're lucky to be down there and playing in a tournament, but it's like I know guys, you know, I know really, really great golfers that didn't, like, they stopped playing because they didn't want to travel. And they're gonna be great as amateurs and they still play and they do that stuff. But like, I remember a buddy of mine in Mexico, like he missed the cut and then he just like had his bags, walk into the door, and he's like, I'm never coming back here again. Walked out and never did. Quit mid season. Done.
Wow.
Like, and he never went back to Mexico after. He just was like, this isn't for me, I'm done.
Yeah.
And it, like, the benefit of the pursuit, he's like, if I can't get it done in Q school and like in back at home, then I don't, it was really funny.
Yeah, that's
you never went back. So, you know, travel is a huge part of it. And for some people, it's really tough. Some people embrace it. Some people love it. I mean, it's rounded me out as a human being. I've just done, like, been able to see, I like to travel. And I'm excited that hopefully in the work that I'm going to get to do now, I get to travel. It's, I would say, less, because you go on site for an extended period of time and I think you're just more, it's a stabler. Correct. Yeah. So the away from home thing really hasn't changed, but if you're in one place for like a month, it's a little bit more stable and you can catch a routine. And I think that's really helpful for like work and just happiness and all that stuff. It's like, you know, 3 weeks on, 1 week off is much more appealing to me than jumping this week to this week to this week to this week to this week, because then by that third week of traveling, then you're at the dog years where it's like
burnt,
never getting out. It's like, yeah. So it's just, that's an interesting, like, getting into the golf course design and construction stuff. Everyone keeps saying like it's unstable and you're going to travel a lot, and I see guys move around so much, but I'm just more excited about, like, you know, getting to be one place and one, like, an extended period of time, not just like 1 week to 1 week, but like maybe a month.
So when you were playing and traveling, though, like, were you the kind of person that you gave yourself time to go explore and like engage with culture? Is that possible with the schedule that is so demanding?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, there's weeks where like I in China, 1 week I didn't go to the Great Wall. Everybody went. I was so tired. And I knew I was going to be hiking all day. Like my legs would have been shot.
It's not an easy trip.
No. And then everybody got food poisoning from the subway on that trip. So I dodged a bullet that week. I remember that was, I was so stoked on that.
And then
one.
It comes out that you set up the meal that they all ate. Yeah.
Competition. Say that when we're not recording, man. Like, come on.
You can always count on the food at 7-Eleven, though, in China.
True.
The food at 7-Eleven bangs.
And McDonald's.
Yes.
Slaps.
And the McDonald's, yeah.
Yeah, McDonald's is safe.
Slaps.
Yeah,
it is so good.
It's good, and they add their own spin on all of it.
They'll have a curveball in there, like something you're just like, what is that?
Right.
I'm going to try it.
It's good. Barbecue pork bun breakfast sandwich. Like, yes, sign me up.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the Big Mac was always so good. You know, with the Asia thing's different than the Latin America thing because you're like the time zone's so like drastic. So like you need a day to like readjust. And that day, it's really helpful to get outside and walk around and like probably not swing a golf club because it's like you're going to hit it bad that first day.
You're
I don't know anybody that takes
off.
Like an 18.
Yeah,
it's like a 14-hour flight and you're just going to stripe as soon as you get off the plane. Like, that's a rare human being. And if you can, like, I'm trying to, you know, hit it well on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, yeah, I was like, normally I'd fly Sunday night. And then Monday was the day I would, like, walk around or just, taking care of your body is, like, first and foremost. And definitely when I was earlier playing, like when I was 24, 25, 26, I would, you know, a lot of the Latin countries had good surf. So I would try and go surf. But then, that was fun. But then, like, my shoulders would get shot. And then it's like, that's maybe not smart. So, like, I don't know. I learned as I got, like, older, I guess. I was still pretty young. But as I got older, like, there's a limit to how much you could see and do just because you're there. I mean, you're there for work. And play well. So, but if you're not going and seeing different things and experience it, that's really doing an injustice to the opportunities that golf brings you traveling for sure. I think so. There's a balance in there. It's one of the best things about our sport. It's to meet so many amazing people and like you guys and travel the world. It's like great. So,
it's one of the reasons we love it, man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Unlike your competitor in Mexico who dropped his bags and never returned.
He was out.
You know, I hope he's found, you know, greener pastures. I hope he's like reinvented himself, you know. but it seems like, you know, you have had this underbelly of creativity despite, you know, playing at a high level. Mm-hmm. You had something else.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about, like, you know, your creative process. Where does that come from? I'm always really, really impressed by professional athletes who are also professional creatives.
Totally.
That's really, really interesting to me. So I'm curious. I saw Summer School Project. I thought that was incredible.
Thank you.
One of the reasons I'm really excited to talk to you, but can you talk to us a little bit about like where your creativity comes from? Where did you get that spark? And is the script used in like the text for Summer School Hangry Project? Is that your actual handwriting?
Yeah. I think that's like my. I'm not like I wouldn't call like I don't. I'm not a great painter. You know, and like I painted, you know, that little, this thing right here, but that's not good. I mean, that's a crown box. Like it's not,
cool.
Whatever.
I like that.
And yeah, it's like, and that was in summer school and all that stuff. And like, but I'm not, you know, if you ask me to draw like a portrait of a face, I can't do that. But I love like cursive for some reason is like my thing. I don't know why it's, I like
art.
I like writing in cursive and like,
Well, yeah, golf course professionals are really good calligraphers, right? You have to write a score sheet on, you know, on the member guest tournament and things like that. Take a little credit for that one.
I don't know if I could do that. Like, I maybe with practice, but you look at my scorecard.
I'd be interested to see a scoreboard with your cursor in it, though. That'd be dope.
It's just funny. Like, I don't, my scorecards are messy. Like, what? I'm not like a clean scorecard writer. And like, I have friends that like love having a clean scorecard and no scribbles and stuff like that. It's like, mine's a mess. And like, my yardage books were a mess. It's like, but if I sit down, I think it probably has a lot to do with thank you notes is where that started. I'm focusing on the cursive that you're asking about right now, but I, you know, I write a lot of thank you notes for, I get to do cool stuff. I'm really lucky to, you know, tournament directors and people that you host families. I think maybe it started in there as like a little extra, like instead of just, I don't know, making it look nicer. I think maybe it stayed with me. And then during the summer school process, I was writing a lot because I felt like that was a really, you know, it was a school aesthetic and learning experience. And like, I just dove headfirst into it. And now it's like, my buddy got married last weekend. I wrote his letter all in cursive. And I just I guess I like doing that now.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
Dude, letters are a dying art.
Yes.
For real. But yeah. that's such a valuable.
Yeah. Physical thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Physical thank
that's
you.
That's such a beautiful thing, though. You know, man, like my mom used to sit me down after every single birthday and Christmas and force my hand at thank you cards. And I hated her for it. It became such a terrible task. But now it's like, I mean, it's
super important.
It's so important.
It's a really sweet thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a lot to do with like, you just carve the time out of your day. Like,
exactly.
I took the time to write this note and go send it. And it's like, I could whip up an email in 3 seconds. And it's like, you get, an email. I don't know. And like, a lot of times, like, you could accomplish the same thing with an email. That's fine.
Sure.
But,
sure,
you know, it's, like my buddy getting married, that was an instance where it's like, I'm going to sit down and write him a note. And there's people that I should have written notes to that I don't. But no, it's definitely a dying art. I think it's really important. It's something that we try and teach the hangar kids and stuff like that. But, but thank you for your compliments on summer school. And it's amazing to me how it got to you. Like, it you know, you're out in LA and you saw it and like you like golf and were able to understand like maybe the storyline that we were witnessing from the hangry kids. And, but you know, back to my friend in Mexico, you know, that's just who he was. Like, he just wasn't ready to travel. But I did always have this other creative side that maybe didn't show itself to a lot of people. They probably noticed it in like little quirks, and like maybe like in different things that I did and whatnot, and maybe like a distraction it could look like at times for me. But then, that summer school process kind of really solidified that I really like to create and do things, and that you know my brother is a really big influence on me. He's a skateboarder and makes short films in Chicago, and it's like, his life is that. And it's like, I just kind of woke up when we were making summer school that, you know, my worth wasn't always invested in what I was shooting. And I had this other side of me that I could really dive into and explore. And there was people that I was surrounding myself with and getting to know that also made their life out of it. And like, Tom Sachs is an artist in New York, and I was really fortunate to meet him, and his language that he speaks was like kind of everything that I was looking for. I didn't understand somebody that was like equally disciplined as a professional athlete, but an artist. And that combination I had never like noticed. And like,
That's interesting.
You know, the professionalism of art and like the practice of it and the discipline of it. And like, I just never, I guess, thought about it and studied it. And then when I met Tom, I was able to like, I mean, I just geeked out on all of his stuff. And then, you know, Virgil, I kind of studied the language that he spoke. And then it's like, I was like, wow, all of a sudden I feel like I'm having a language come out of that you get to see in my handwriting and you get to see in summer school. And now fast forward to like right now, it's like I'm consumed with this project called A Monday in Palm Beach. and I'm trying to write a script, and I don't know how to write a script. Like, I just, but I gave myself 1 year to do something that I'd never done before. And, you know, I love it. Like, I love it. It's so fun for me. I wasn't able to write it when I was gone. In Wisconsin and Chicago, I felt like I like let the subconscious work on it for a little bit, and now I'm back to it. And it's like, I've had like a day and a half of opening all of my old notes that I did up until the point that I left and diving back into it. And it's like, you know, it might never see the light of day, but it just brings out the side of me that I like to practice, I guess.
So, that's what matters though, man. And I honestly find that that's a good way to create, is if you have an idea and you have to put it down for a period of time, but it keeps coming back to you, that's your subconscious telling you that this is an idea that you have to pursue.
Yeah, for sure.
So that, I think that like that gestation period in your subconscious is like a really healthy thing creatively.
Yes. Yes.
For those people who are listening who don't know, could you describe what Summer School and Hangry Project is?
So the Hangry Project is a nonprofit I started 2018, the fall. It was actually kind of a byproduct of being in that hotel room in Brazil. I've told the story before, but basically I was like really just sad, like not having a good time. And I was like, what's going to make me? And I always wanted to use golf as a way to give back because it's been really good to me. And I thought I had to be on the PGA Tour to do that. I mean, you see all these guys with foundations and stuff because they have the resources to do that. But I was like, I'm smart enough. I can do this now. And yeah, I wrote it down. I made a logo. The logo looked good. I made a hoodie. The hoodie looked good. I wore it to a Christmas party. People liked it. So I started making hoodies. And it was like, the idea was the same way you and I get food at a golf course. It's accessible and there's food normally in a halfway house. I would put a fridge in a skate park and fill it up for the kids that skated there. So then I looked around the area and here in West Palm about skate parks, and I found a place called Phipps Park that was perfect for what I was trying to do. And we put a fridge in Phipps and started filling it up, and we got to know the Hangry kids, like the kids that use the fridge. And that, you know, that was 2018, 2019. And then COVID happened and the kids were like, what do we do? I don't know. You know, this has never happened to me before. I don't have any. And, you know, towards the end of the year, golf was outside and it was a little bit more acceptable to like get outside. And kids are insane. Like, you can't, it's so hard to separate them. Like, a lot of their parents were essential workers. And we were just like, you know, let's take them to the golf course every Thursday. That was kind of the start of it. We took them to the first tee of the Palm Beaches. And I was like, well, let's film it. Like, let's tell this story. See what it looks like and get to like really get to know the kids. And we're doing some good stuff, but maybe if we tell the story, it'll reach more people and maybe they'll be inspired. And that's, we're really trying to get that spark out there. So, you know, we started filming the kids, and then that was the summer of kind of late summer of 2020 was like those long Thursdays of, you know, watching after the whoever showed up at Phipps that knew we were going to the golf course, we kind of carpool them out to the course. And some of the parents would take them as well. And it was like, we just filmed it. And then I wanted to introduce them to some of the amazing people that have been in my life and show them, like, you know, what golf can bring and basically bridge this gap between skateboarding and golf. And if there's a bridge between it, the Hangry kids were the ones that were walking across it. That was really the idea. And, you know, I have this friend, his name's David Hamzik, call him Crux Max. He was really the director, and I can't do anything like that without him. He's incredible. Like, his stamp's all over Summer School. He's in it. And he's just an amazingly talented filmmaker that I just believe in wholeheartedly. And he really believed in my vision to kind of make it come to life. And so we just sat out to finish it. I mean, that's the hardest thing of making that kind of stuff, is finishing it and butting it up. And and then, you know, it took about a year and a half. And then we premiered it June 10th of 21. At the Palm Beach Improv, and we just like sold the place out, and the kids got to see it for the first time, which was so, they were just like yelling in it. It was such a special night. But that's, you know, that was Summer School, right? It was a time and a place. I wasn't traveling for pro golf. I was able to really like work with the kids and make something great and tell their story, tell a little bit of Hangry's story. And like reflecting back on it, like I really miss that time and place. And it's hard because I can't do that. Like, I don't have the time to make another summer school right now. But the kids are great. Like
that's why you called it chapter one.
Exactly. Chapter one. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I got to catch up with Jack, one of the Hanger kids, yesterday. It was amazing. Like, we went to a thrift store. He wants to start a deep hop. I'm trying to teach him, like, you gotta like how to, like, we're looking at this, like, really cool vintage t-shirt selling for $5. I'm like, that's like worth $60 at a thrift store somewhere else. But we're just like, yeah. I'm trying to coach that. So it's as much as like them making sure they have food and stuff. But now they're like getting to 15, 16, 17. It's like, now we can start to teach them, like, you know, life skills and all that stuff. And it's just, it's the best. I love them to death. They're so much cooler than I could ever be. They're just, they have so much style, and one of the kids, Noah Pollard, is an amazing skateboarder, like, sick. And he, you know, he's with Death Wish right now as one of the AMs on the team. It's like,
wow.
I just love support, and they all kind of circle around him, and just seeing him skate just makes me so happy. I'll start crying if I talk about it too much. I'm just really proud of him.
That's okay.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of Hanger and Summer School in a nutshell. That was kind of what led to the documentary that we filmed over in Ireland. Somebody watched Summer School and hired us to film them. And that's led to a couple like different other side creative projects that we get to do. And it's just like, it's cool. I didn't think that we could carve that out for ourselves, but we kind of have.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. It's amazing that it reached you guys, because we didn't really market it. Like, it's out there. I didn't like push it. I pushed it when we were doing it, but then afterwards, like, I just let it be. Like, I just kind of, you know, I don't post about Summer School that much. I don't really post on Hangry Project that much anymore, but the mission's the same. We still keep the fridge full, and it's like, you can't do it all sometimes. And that's a tough thing. I will say that.
No, especially when you're working like five jobs.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, like, you can't work five jobs, and I can't, you know, work in golf art.
Not do it well.
Yeah, and like, I can't. You just have to separate your time. Like, the longevity of it scares me. It's like, you know, what's going to happen to Hangry when I'm gone? I don't know. You know, so, but that's why we made Summer School, because maybe that spark goes out into the world and it catches fire somewhere else. It might not be here in West Palm, but it could be in LA, it could be in New York, and somebody might watch that and get inspired and do something. And that's really like a really powerful thing of like the internet and social media that I think maybe people ignore sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, for us, we've been doing this a little over a year and a half, and I can't tell you how many people have said, "Do you know Brad Gale? Because you have to have him on your show."
That's so funny.
Yeah. And so, you know, for us, we've seen that, like, good people want to connect to other good people and that are doing interesting things and meaningful things in the golf space. So yeah, it's been a long time coming to connect with you. And yeah, we're so grateful for your time.
I'm humbled. I'm glad we were able to make it happen. I'm really fortunate that, like, that golf brings you some amazing people, like, you know, Cole and Darren out west, Ryan, the Metalwood guys. I know you guys are good friends with and gotten to know and had on your show. Like, love those guys. Like, when I'm driving to all these places, like, I'll just go through the phone book and just call all of my different friends and Cole's name. If you're listening and you picked up when I called you this summer when I was driving, like, thank you. Like, it means so much to me. Like, because when you're doing a 10-hour, 8-hour haul, it's like, it's almost in the same genre as the thank you notes. Like, it's just, I love reaching out to people and catching up and just what are you doing? And then I'll probably blab about some stupid ideas in my head for when you got to listen to it. But like, I just love, I'm proud of Cole. And like, I've only met him in the last, you know, couple of years, but just, he's a perfect example of somebody that, I don't know if he's told me about you guys, but like, he kills it. Like, in the way he thinks, it inspires me and makes me want to continue this stuff that, you know, other people might not understand, look at, and like, how's he gonna do that? And that doesn't make sense. Well, it's like, a lot of stuff Cole does doesn't make sense, but it works. So cool.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's humbling that they would speak of me in a nice light like that, for sure.
That frog boy makes his way on this podcast one way or another every episode.
Fucking episode.
God, I honestly, it's getting to be a little bit too much now.
Am I over here?
No, I'm just kidding.
No, what the shit, man? Like,
yeah,
we almost like it.
Fucking cool.
actually gave me
it's actually funny.
Gave me a discount code to say that. Metalwood 30.
There you go.
Oh yeah, yeah. Metalwood Brad Gale.
He texted me before. He's like, "Hey man, if you plug in Metalwood, I'll slide you a discount code." No, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
Cole Young is the one person that does not need any plugs on this show. Because somehow he comes up every episode. So
we are not sponsored by Metalwood.
I'm sorry.
I just got a new saddle glove in the mail the other day. I played this morning with it. And let me tell you, when you play a round of golf, not range, when you play a round of golf with a fresh new glove, it boosts my confidence, like straight up.
Yo.
Step up to the first tee, fresh new glove, fresh fit. I'm putting everybody on notice.
Man's going low.
I'm going low. And you know what? We want y'all to go low too.
Our good friend Cole Young says that every match is won on the first tee. And I know it's not just the fit. It's not just the shoes. It's not just the clubs. It's not just the bag. The glove is a part of that melange, a part of that pie, part of the puzzle. Find your piece.
And they got hella colors. I'm told they came out with a few new ones.
Ooh. Please, I implore you, go to redroostergolf.com and use our code GGT20. That's 20, and you'll get 20% off your first order. Tell them the shrink sent you.
I'm interested in the golf course architecture stuff because that can also be another creative outlet for you and probably is. But I also know from friends in the industry that it's a lot of just like pushing dirt around and coming up with like ecological surveys that are not so creative.
Yeah.
So has there, what were you going into that field with in terms of expectations and how have those been met or disproven?
It's a really well-phrased question, first off, Connor. Like, that's a great way to put it. I it's popular right now. People like talking about golf course architecture. I feel like it's like a thing. It's just, you know, a lot of hot names and renovations and all projects going on that's like cool to do. But yeah, so a lot of it to do was this girl named Sam, who she had just got done working for Tom. She was going back to school and it blew me away that she wanted to go to MIT for architecture. And it blew me away that somebody of like that intelligent, like she had worked for Tom, who's a genius since like for so long. And then she wanted to learn more and go back to school and like continue to sharpen her craft. And it just kind of blew me away. And I wonder if I could still learn something like that, right? And I was like, well, I wonder what golf course architecture would be like. And that was like the spark, right? That first moment of like, And then when we're sitting talking about it. And so, I was like, you know, there's a creativity in there. And that, you know, I like to think pretty creative. So I was like, maybe I could blend golf and creativity. And this is an outlet that I could do. So it kind of stuck in my head and I thought about it. You know, I told my dad about it. He was like, "You're an idiot." And I'm like, "All right." And like, you know, it was a little bit of pushback. Like, you just got done. Great point. Like, you just got done trying to do something that only like 150 people in the world get to do. Now you want to go do something only 10 people in the world get to do.
Yeah.
Great logic. I'm like, whatever, man. So it's like, I was like, so
there are like 10 living golf course architects in the world.
Yeah. And he's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "That's a terrible idea." And I'm like, "All right." So that was kind of the start of it. And then, you know, the opportunity that Gillian's and Jim Wagner were building something in the neighborhood obviously was a little bit of like synchronicity, like, okay, that's great. And I'm a golfer, and the Hangry project's within the area of the golf course. I kind of had like one foot there. And I told the story the other day. I pretty much just showed up and asked for a job. I was like, I just need to start. Like, just let me start. I was like, I don't know what it looks like. And then, you know, one of the first things Gil said to me was, you know, a lot of people want to be a golf course architect. Not a lot of people want to hold a rake in their hand for 7 hours.
Right.
And it was like the first thing he said. And I was like, and you know, of course I'm like, I don't care. Give me a rake. Like, I'll do any, you know, it's like, but that's the attitude I think you have to have. So, you know, I showed up on site, started working, and that's exactly how it was. I mean, it was really physically hard.
It's manual
for
labor.
A long time.
It's physical labor.
Manual labor. Yeah. I mean, that is the weed out right now, is like, you know, how hard are you willing to work? You know, you're a pro golfer, so you're soft. You know, that's their idea. And they're like, well, we're going to break you in this capacity. And it's like,
yeah.
And the cavemen are very true. The cavemen construction is very true to their name.
Yeah.
But those guys are craftsmen. Those guys are amazing. They're experienced. They've been doing it. They all have stories of, you know, breaking rocks for 2 weeks to build up a stone wall on one of the features of their course. It's like that they grew up doing. It's like there's stories that are endless. And anybody that has helped build a golf course will have a story like that. So I just was able to get my first story and experience out of the way. And, you know, luckily I was able to sleep in my own bed while doing that. So it's kind of like, you know, as hard as it was, I was so lucky that I was able to learn and join them. So that, you know, it was definitely harder than I thought, but you're right. Like, I thought it would be a lot of creative practice and like talking about golf holes and green complexes and where bunkers go. Oh no, like absolutely not.
It's like, no, we got 80 tons of dirt that came in today and we need to move it from over here to over there.
Yeah. Here's a shovel.
Here's a shovel. Like, you gotta be like, you gotta load, load sand for a month. Like that's your job.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, like, wow, when somebody was, I was like, am I doing the right things? This and that. And he's like, and I said something. And he's like, that's not the job we're asking you to do. The job we're asking you to do is this and do that. And it's like, okay. And it's like, all right. But all great learning things. It's like, you know, one of Tom's like 10 bullets is creativity is the enemy. And it's like these 10 bullets are basically how not to get fired in your first job. It's like, do these things, it'll be all right. It's like, creativity is the enemy when you're first getting hired. The boss doesn't care for your creative solution. There's a system in place. So that wasn't surprising, but that was definitely for me when I'd been running the ship and the accountability factor was always on my shoulders, whether I'm, you know, making a birdie, bogey, double, it's like, at least I can be accountable for it. Now it's like, now I just need to shut up and listen and work. And it's like, don't get creative. And so that was definitely a curve for me, something I'll probably still not struggle with, but like just be conscious of,
but run
you
into
know?
I'm sure
always
it reminds me a ton of like working in kitchens, like people who have these grand ideas of I want to create recipes or you know I want to do this, but like no, you show up on your first day of working in a kitchen, you're peeling fucking potatoes, you're washing dishes,
you're cleaning,
you're not making the menu.
Yes, like 100%. And like The Bear, I'm sure you guys all watched that.
I've watched it like 3 times.
It's like that girl when she puts the risotto, it's like, why is risotto on the menu? That's a great example of it. And she slides it in there, and of course, it's like a food critic, and then they write the review about it. It's really well written. That's a great example of it. Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the first things I did at the park, and that's the name of the golf course, West Palm Beach Golf Park, that Gil Hans and Jim Wagner basically blew up and did a new golf course there. It's really, really cool and really special to be a public golf course in an area that needs some strong public golf, because everything's so private here. And I did like a little, they asked me to do something behind a green, like on a sand pro, and I did it. And I guess somebody was like, that's not what we do here. It's like, just, he was like, that's not it. And I was just like, I laughed about it. I'm like, oh, I think it's cool. It's like, that's just not it. And it's like, that happens more often than not. You know, I've gotten better. That's all in the learning curve and experience. And like, you know, a lot of times now, you know, you're talking about like what they are doing is pushing dirt and stuff like that. I mean, one of the things that I'm starting to love, I mean, an accidental thing was the plants in nature and learning how grass seasons and, you know, being outside and recognizing like this one tree, its life cycle and like what it's doing throughout the course of a year and why is grass growing here? Why is not? That's really beautiful. And I love that side of it. That was a surprise. Something else I was going to say. Oh, the engineering and functionality of things and drainage. That was something I didn't really think about when I was playing, because normally you just, you know, hit it and you're just trying to shoot the low score. but now it's like, you know, a lot of the best golf course architects are just amazing drainage experts and everything and the shapers. I mean, and it needs to be functional. It needs to work. You know, how, you know, the grading and the percentage that water runs because of the soil that's underneath, that sand is the different types of sand, dirt, and all that stuff is something that I'm really excited that's the body of, that's what I have to learn, because it's going to take time, but that's, you know, but it's a cool thing to learn because it's a living, breathing ecosystem. And there's great conversation of, you know, sustainability and all that stuff right now. And it's like, that's fascinating to me that's something that I have to continue to learn was unexpected for sure. Different golf courses are built with different methods of construction, so they have different finishing styles. That's yeah. really cool to me. You know, why does this architect do that? And he does that. One looking for the natural look, one's looking for the clean cut look. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of times that's the method of construction and then the practice of the maintenance that goes involved. It's like, there's no right or wrong, but maybe, you know, it's a preference. It's like just different tastes and genres, stuff like that.
I'm glad you used the word preference. And I'm wondering if your preference in golf courses has changed at all from when you were playing professionally to now having dipped a toe into architecture.
Well, I think the common thing that I've always loved is firmness. Like I love, like, because it was rare in Indiana growing up, like we didn't really have that firm of golf courses. Like it would happen in the fall.
Everything was plush.
Yeah. And like, it's just, you know, it's like cornfield soil. Like it's just not, it's a little muddy and a little clay in there. And it's like, just, yeah. There were times a season and where things would run, but like playing in Argentina at Jockey Club, it's like the fairways are running like 12 and it's like, it's rock hard rock. And it's like, I would look forward to those weeks because that's what I'd always watch, you know, the British Open. And I always like had this, right. You know, I always said that I'm going to go to Ireland and Scotland because I'm going to be playing in the British Open. My golf will take me there someday. And I always thought that I would be the type of player that would thrive under those conditions. Like, I love the idea of like having to land a ball 30, 40 yards short of the green and run it up and hit it low and hook it and slice it and all that stuff to get it to where it needs to go. So I think I've always loved firmness of a golf course. I think that's just over color and all that stuff. But yeah, I think maybe it's changed a little bit. I think I'm definitely more accepting of poor lies. That's because, because of the, now I understand, you know, I worked on the grounds crew at the park. After the cavemen left, they were like, you need to work on the grounds crew if you really want to do this. And so I worked for Frank O'Rourke, the head superintendent, on the grounds crew for 6 months. The scale of effort that it takes to maintain a course to a high level is nuts. You need bodies and you need people that are going to show up every day at 4:30. And it's like, it's nuts. And it's like, I guess I definitely overlooked that. So now if I get a bad lie on a golf course, I'm like, you know what? Like, suck it up, you know, because golfers be the first ones to bitch about it. We're the first ones to complain about a bad lie.
Yeah.
Divot's kind of a different story, a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, but that's not the architect or the shaper's fault, you know?
No. Mm-hmm. And that's, and like, you know, I don't blame a poor lie on the superintendent. I mean, maybe you can, but like, I'm definitely just more accepting after understanding the scale and effort and time and love that it takes to make a really well manicured golf course for sure. But I think it is cool because some of my favorite golf courses are in great conversations of great golf course architecture that I had growing up. So there's crossovers, you know, Crooked Stick Golf Club, I hold really dear to my heart in Indiana, Palmetto Golf Club in Aiken, South Carolina, really dear to my heart. My mom was a golfer. She played golf at San Jose State. And so it's just been like, that was my introduction to it and her love for it. And so as a kid, I was just able to, she loves playing golf. And it's like, play golf with my mom and my dad and brother at all these kind of cool to great courses. And then now I get to, it's a little bit kind of in my bones as far as like seeing it at an early age. But then that's in a wild conversation of how would you create something new? And it's, I don't know. I mean, that's why I think you see so many people that take different well-done ideas and just implement them in different places, which is it's completely fine because, the landscape will always change.
Well, you brought up, playing with your family at a young age. And do you have a core golf memory from that time playing with your mom or your folks?
Yeah. The one that just came up is when I cussed in front of my mom. She made me eat soap. It's really funny. That's core. That's hardcore.
That was on the golf course?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. First hole, I flew a wedge over the green and just said, sit down. She was like, she looked at me like I was crazy. And I'm like, I am so sorry. And then
you're like,
I was like in my 20s. Like, it wasn't like I was young. I was like, home and she's got a knife and a bar of soap. And I'm like, what are you doing with both of those? And she cut a piece of soap. She's like, eat it. I was like, oh my God. She's like, I'm mad. I was like, Like, mom,
she went with the bar soap and not the liquid.
It was awful. It was Dial. It wasn't even Irish Springs. It was like straight
the yellow bar.
It was the white bar. It was so bad.
Oh, the white bar is even worse.
I can taste that right now. My mouth tastes bad.
Yeah, I need to go rinse out.
But that's why I laughed when you asked me that. I just thought about
that is a core memory. Yeah, that's a core memory.
I think, you know, besides that, I'm just so lucky. Like, I have an amazing family, and like there's four of us. And so, you know, my brother kind of stopped playing golf when he got into college because he just started skating more, but now he's kind of loving it. He's kind of coming back to it because he's working in kind of an office setting, and it's like his bosses are like, we'll take him to play golf. He'll be like, no, I don't know how to play. And then we'll just like rip one. And he's like pretty good. And like, he's good. Like, we played in Colorado this year for a wedding, first hole, driver down the middle. Then he takes a hybrid, hits it to like 10 feet for eagle. And then he misses the putt and just has a meltdown. And it's just so funny to play golf with my brother now. I love it so much. Yeah, but like, at that, just being with my family and being able to go to a golf course, you know, people talk about the inaccessibility to golf a lot and how it's a hard barrier of entry sport. And that's a reality that we're in. And luckily, my family loved golf and I was able to always go to a golf course. That was my place. Hitting balls on a range for hours and hours and hours, hours growing up was my favorite place in the world. And it still is. And, you know, I'm going to go hit balls after this. Yeah. And it's funny, like, I'm in building golf courses, you don't get to play. If you're on site, you need to be working. And so it's a little sad that I don't get to play as much. And, you know, my body is not in the same shape that it was when I was playing. And that'll, you know, continue to be the case. I'm going to have to work around that. But no, that's the core memory of it all. It's just being able to always go hit balls. It's shaped me into who I am and introduced me to just amazing people. So thankful for it. For sure.
The best part of that story is that you said you were in your 20s and not like 8.
I know. I'm sure I definitely got in trouble when I was younger for cussing and having a temper. I was pretty sassy on the golf course. Definitely gotten better at that. I still definitely eased up a little bit.
Well, that might be a good segue into a question that we ask. If you had the opportunity to play a round of golf with a younger version of yourself, what do you think the conversation would look like?
Don't rush. Like, you have time. Like, the sense of urgency, and you remember you asked us earlier about the PGA Tour. I always wanted to play the PGA Tour. I wanted to be one of those guys. And I still do. That's like not changing. I still think I could qualify for US Open and play a practice round with some of my buddies that are playing right now. Like, I still think I can do that. And I hope I'm going to. Like, I'm going to work. I'm going to try and qualify for the British and the US Open. And, like, it might never happen.
Wow.
But I'm going to try. And it doesn't matter if I'm a professional and amateur. I know, like, I'm getting my amateur status back, and I'm really excited to, you know, maybe to compete in, like, the mid-am or something like that. I just, you know, it'll be harder because I won't practice as much. But I get, you know, even at Oklahoma State, I put so much pressure on making the team. Not getting better, not, you know, just trying to fix the things that were lacking, or really looking at my golf game and figuring out, okay, you're good at this, let's focus on this, and more intentional, and, you know, my practicing, not hitting, you know, I'm a pretty good iron player, so stop hitting irons for 8 hours, like chip and putt, because putting's important. Like, pretty cliche things, but no, I would have told myself not to rush and learn. And you don't have it figured out, and stop getting so mad, because it's exhausting. The older you get, it's harder to stay mad longer. You're going to tire yourself out. Learn to laugh at yourself. That's something I've gotten a little better at. And, like, you know, it's kind of cool. So I made a 12 on a hole last year, and nice. It was sweet. It was, the scorecard's insane.
High score.
A lot of balls out of bounds, like all happening at the same time. almost ran out of balls.
Like, oh God.
Like, yeah. And that has never happened since I've been playing.
That is a terrifying feeling.
And truly. that was the weekend that Tom Sachs had the Rockefeller Center opening for the whole Nike wear tester thing. And it was like, I did this, that little clock thing right here. And that was going to be shown that weekend at the Rockefeller Center. And I was like really excited about it because it was a cool project. And like, I was part of, you know, that the wear tester thing. And it was like, I learned a lot from Tom and that experience and all that stuff. And so I made a 12 on that Friday. And the show, or that Thursday, and like the opening was like that weekend. So I ended up being able to fly up there in that weekend. But in doing that, like that Sunday, Monday after that whole whirlwind, because like I missed the cut, obviously, 12 in there, and missed the cut, flew up to New York, did the opening, had coffee with Sam that we talked about earlier. It was all happening at once. Mm-hmm. And then that like Monday or Tuesday, I like posted on my Instagram my scorecard, and that I made the 12. And I think, and it was like, I would have never done that as a 24, 25, 26, like a younger me wouldn't have done that. A younger me would have been embarrassed. Yeah, and yeah. I laughed at it, and it was funny because it was funny. And I was happy enough with everything else that was, I was comfortable with myself enough that everything else in my life was on a good track and path that I was able to laugh and make light of making that 12. And that was kind of a moment where I realized like, I'm learning to be detached from my score. And I mean, that's at the age of 30, or like 29. Like that's crazy. Like that's, you know, if 10-year-old me knew that, 12-year-old, I'd probably be on tour. Like, but it's just, there are things like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and then people ask me why, you know, get in a swing coach to be on tour. It's like, that ain't it. Like that's a part of the puzzle. So, you know, that's definitely that's a great question. And that's kind of something
I like that. Don't
about.
Rush.
Mm. Yeah. No. Guy named Greg Carton, sports psychologist.
You know,
really,
Greg
really good. Of course. Greg's how I met Tom.
I used to caddy for Greg Carton at Braeburn Country Club.
Really? The sports psychologist?
No joke. Yeah.
That's amazing. What a
dude. He's incredible.
A small world.
He's
so
incredible.
Cool. So I've got some books from him. Like, I met him at a time where
let's get him on the
podcast. You got to get him on the podcast.
Oh, you should 100%.
He was one of my favorite loops at whenever I was paired up with him. That was like a gorgeous day. I would always learn something from him. He's an incredible
Exactly, right? That's all you could ever ask for. It's like talk about great conversation. Just I mean, he studied psychology.
Bro, I should be paying you.
If you're caddying for him, he's paying you to just hang out with him. That's amazing. That's a good, that's a win.
Exactly.
That's a win-win. So sick. But no, that's so a cool guy. So I missed US Open qualifying in 2017 on the back nine. Had it in the bag. Would have been my first major, first tour event. Made like two doubles coming in. I know.
Wow.
Got it. Nothing to do with my golf game. Everything to do with how I handled the situation. And so at that point, I'm going to let's maybe invest some money in a sports psychologist, because what you're doing otherwise seems to be all buttoned up. You gave yourself 27 holes of good golf and you gave yourself nine holes of really bad golf. So, but that's how I asked around who's great, who do I want to talk to? And you know, the names came up like Rotella and stuff like that. And it's like, but Greg's name came up and I had a couple phone calls with him and really changed my life in a lot of ways.
We are very graciously sponsored by the good people at Red Rooster Golf. They make our favorite golf gloves in the game. And we have a segment that we call Get a Grip. And we're going to give you a minute, full uninterrupted minute, to rant about anything that is grinding your gears in the golf world at this moment.
Okay.
Take as much time as you need. Oh, you're good?
I thought about it. No, I thought about it, but I don't think I don't have an answer.
Okay.
I'll wing something. I'll start with like a hot word, hot phrase.
Dude, rip it. Rip it.
So grow the game, something that's talked about a lot. But there's a game to be played on the internet and branding and marketing that you can do to grow the game, right? We can talk about it. I would love to see more people change their neighborhoods. I would love to see more people get ground level with growing the game. It doesn't have to be getting that famous person that's got the most followers to talk about it. It's as simple as showing up on the range with somebody that might not else have been able to go to that range and having them hit some golf balls and introduce that game, introduce what you love to them, talk about it, have a good time, you know, learn why they have it. Why haven't you been to the golf course before? Why haven't you hit balls? And it can start with one person. It doesn't need to be 10, 20, 30, 40. I don't care how many numbers this organization, that organization's putting up. We had 50,000 kids at our camp this year. That's great. How many of them came back? You know, how many of them are playing? How many of them are calling you on a Tuesday afternoon because they're hitting balls by themselves and they can't figure out how to stop slicing it? That's what I want to hear about more when talking about growing the game. I want to see people start to tell more individual stories, and it's happening. And I'm not saying that this doesn't happen, but you know, it takes time out of your day to really share a love that you have for the game of golf into somebody else. It doesn't have to be 10, 20, 30 people. You could change one person and you can grow the game that way and, you know, more effectively. And I want to hear those types of stories. I don't care how many numbers you're putting up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money that's in golf, right? So let's use those resources the right way if you're going to talk about growing the game. Because the dollar goes such a long way when you use it the right way. Like, I got, you know, the Hangry kids would have never really been able to go to a golf course if we didn't do summer school. Now some of them have golf clubs. Some of the people older than them, my age, have golf clubs now. And I just, it makes me proud. And I feel like that we did the right thing. There's some kids that don't play anymore. There's some kids that do. But, you know, Zion Wright is my favorite example. You know, he's a skateboarder. And we took him to the golf course for the first time. Now he's, you know, calling me saying he's at Goat Hill Park. And the people at Goat Hill Park tells me he shows up to hit balls with like Keegan Palmer and other skateboarders. And like nothing makes me happier. In the way I presented it to Zion, it made him want to go back without me. Mm-hmm. That's all I could ever ask for. That's what I feel like growing the game could look like more. Not your Instagram post that you helped 40,000 kids' lives and you have some pro golfer like in your arms. I don't care.
Brad Gale, get a grip.
Get a grip.
Yeah.
Get a grip.
Okay. I went hot with grow the game.
Hell yeah.
Y'all never heard that phrase before.
I love it.
We're 100% here for it. I know you like music what's your walk-up song? What gets you hyped up?
Oh, I did think about this and I don't know it. I really don't know. I mean, DMB by ASAP Rocky.
Oh, I like that.
Yep, that's it.
DMT?
No. Hold on. That was DMB, right? With Rihanna in the video?
It's DMB,
yeah.
I thought you were going to say Dave Matthews Band, and then we would have had to make you leave the podcast.
Wonderwall.
This podcast
Wonderwall
is
by
over.
Oasis.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I did get on a Dave Matthews kick like earlier this year when I was mowing grass at the running.
Anything by
I was, like,
Jason
all
Mraz.
Of it. No,
I'm sharing this this playlist with you. Hold on, I have a message from you from March 6th.
Bro,
what did I say? I think I said some shit to you.
No. I was talking shit on my stories, and I was like, I'm aware that a mixed scramble isn't an original idea, but I'm willing to do something about it. If I write an email template addressed to some players, their sponsors, and the commissioner of their respective leagues, would you send it? And you said, fire it away, my G.
I'd send it. You got to talk about it being that at Bradford. I remember that. I remember that. It was like so many things that
I drafted the email. I was going crazy that day. I was on one.
I love your voice, like you say things that I don't like, and you just say how you feel about things, and I love that. And it's like, I remember I was like, man, all right, do it. Then I just sent it out like that. And I was like, I love that so much. Oh, it's amazing. See, that's it right there. Get to it. Send
that.
It. Let's go. I love it. Do something.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That's a bit.
We're gonna circle
yes,
back.
Yes, we are. March 6th.
We're gonna circle back on that.
Circle back.
Yes. Let's go, Bradford. Let's go.
What is the time on the golf course that you've laughed the absolute hardest?
Oh, my buddy. I was caddying for my buddy. I don't know if I like was laughing at the time, but I was caddying for my buddy in the Palmetto Amateur, and we were debating on if he could get a 7-iron over the lip of a bunker on number five. Like, it was an 8 and a 7. Amazing. He's like, I can't get this over the lip. I was like, yes, you can. Like, it's so easy. Just air one out. Like, get it out. And it hit the lip and hit him in the leg. And it, he made like a triple. He made it. It was 100% my fault. Like 100. I am not.
You egged him on.
I am not that great of a caddy. Like, I'm not. Like, I believe, like, if I'm caddying for you, we're invincible and we're going to take on everything. And it's like, I literally convinced him, I'm like, you can hit a 70. Like, it's not that bad. Like, I'm like, got the club laying out, doing the angle thing. Smokes the lip, hits him in the shoe, and he looks right at me and he's like, are you kidding me, Brad Gale? And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, that's my. I like handed him the 8 afterwards. I was like, you can have the 8 now.
Do it again.
Yeah. So I don't know if I laughed in that moment, but that is probably one of the funniest. And then he chipped in on like 16 and like fist pumped, and he just played. It was he's such a roller coaster of a human being that day. But I mean, there's, you know, that's so many things have happened where like you're playing in a Wolf game with 6 people and your buddy flubs a chip. God. And you can't, like, I love it. I mean, I wish I remembered more of the times that I've laughed as hard as I have on a golf course. Colin Featherstone making a hole in one at Goat Hill Park on number 9 while we were filming it.
Mm.
There's a video out there on Twitter of him making it and then me giving the airplane. Like, I just started running around. Awesome. Like, I think we had a couple beers, but like, it was
allegedly.
And I mean, it was on 9. So we were about to go to the halfway house. Like, it was ready. It was just right there for us. And TK Kelly pulled his phone out and filmed it. And Colin made it. And we could believe it.
That's the dream.
A cool moment. And the video is funny because Colin's like, it went in, and I'm already running. Like, I'm like in the background doing the airplane. Like, I don't know why. I'm gone.
You didn't even care.
I thought I just took off running. So excited. It was a blur. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, that was so fun. That's why I just go to Hill Park. Such a special place. Love that to death.
Yeah. We got
to
get out there, man.
It really is.
Yeah.
You played there, right? Yeah. Bradford.
I love it. I love it there. It's
the best.
It's one of my favorite places in Southern California, and it's like, it's a 2-hour drive from LA.
Yeah.
But I would gladly make it.
It's near. Is it Oceanside?
Oceanside.
It's Oceanside. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Location's insane. It's hilly. It's just so cool. That is the most. Should be a case study on the most accepting place in golf and welcoming. Pure accepting of bad lies, accepting of, you know, the range, and they've redone the range, and they always are adding little improvements. And I just think if you go there, it's, you know, it breaks down all the stereotypes that everybody says in golf. That place shatters them. And you go to Goat Hill, you get a warm hug, and you get to go stripe it around at a cool, fun little novelty of it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't even call it a novelty. It's just a fun golf course. And
yeah.
Big fan of that place.
Yep. I'm excited for this, given your creative mind, but also you've spent so much of your life on golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of your favorite golf smells?
You know what? I thought about this one as well. I didn't mean to like prepare, but the grip solvents, that's like so great. I mean, there's no way. I think Rory said that, so I'm stealing a little bit from there.
Yeah,
right. But gas.
That's. Because if you're doing it, there's such like a re-gripping your clubs is like a thing. Like, it's like, I love doing it. I think it's like, if you really want to, I think it's something.
It's meditative.
It is. I think it's something that every golfer should do is re-grip their own clubs at some point, or at least know
how to do it. Yeah.
A thing. It's a thing, right? It's not that hard. It's a little bit of a problem. You're going to screw some grips up. You're going to have to cut a bunch off, but like, it's a thing.
You're just in the back of the shop huffing solvent.
I know. the morning smells, the dewiness.
Yeah.
Fresh cut grass, not really the fresh cut grass, but like that little bit of dew coming off the ground, and it's just like, I'm out here. I'm about to stripe. I'm going to hit so good today. No three putts. Like that kind of that smell, that like potential before you play in the morning.
Well, if you like the morning smells, we got something for you in the next month
we
or
sure
two.
Do.
Yep.
Yeah. You're going to have to send us your address, one of your many addresses.
Drop a pin.
Is this a teaser? No, I just have the one. I can't wait to be in one place for a while.
The course you grew up playing on with your folks, maybe it's the same course you got a bar soap handed to you for cussing on the course. Yeah. Let's say you win a tournament there. Mm-hmm. They invite you back the next year. You get to host it. Mm-hmm. Group golf therapy's there. Your mom is there. She got the knife and the soap ready if you slip up again. But you're hosting a dinner.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the menu?
So we're going to do a little bit of sushi. This place, and I grew up a place called Highland Country Club in Indiana. And it's really cool because it's like a kind of a, like the architect that did it, it's like a linksy, like a guy who's a Scottish guy. Like he's like, it's like one of his only courses in the States. It's crazy. But I would have sushi from this place called Ocean World that's in Indianapolis, and it's such like a little hole in the wall joint. And then I maybe do, you know, I love good food, but I'm pretty easy. Like, I'd probably make my parents cook it. If I'm being honest, like I always said, if I got to do the Augusta thing, I would want my mom to be able to chef some stuff up for me because she's always chefed up like the lasagna, you know, the meatballs. Yes. We've got some Italian, she's a Shirelli. Like I always like thinking, or made a name Shirelli, my brother's middle name. I always thought it'd be so funny having her like in the Augusta kitchen, like prepping for everybody, and like, she's got like this.
That's what I envision too.
Yeah, it's like she's got this rice dish that she makes. So it's like I'd get her a little help with like some sushi, but then I'd let like you know my dad and her just like see how much they could cook, and I just that's it. I don't even know. I'd let them course it. Let them figure it out, you know?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
After party.
Mama Gale.
That's always the...
Yeah.
That's the image I always have in my head, like when someone's like, oh, my uncle's catfish, or like my mom's macaroni and cheese. Like I'm picturing them inside of the kitchen at this golf course.
Yeah.
That's what you want, but they got to bring their own pots and pans because there's something about... the greasy...
Yeah. That heirloom cast iron.
Cooked... the crusty ass pan that's been in the family for 20 generations. It's got all the flavors, all the family secrets. That's the one we want in the kitchen.
That's
flavor
amazing.
And love.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's really cool. Your guys is what you guys are doing is amazing. It's talking about golf and like the love for it. It's a very safe space. I think you guys probably talked about that so much. And I was nervous at first to do this. Like you guys, we've never met before.
Oh.
You know, and it's like I was at such a, you know, transitional time in the last couple of years, and you know, I'm really lucky and happy that I get to continue to talk about golf and the good that it can bring everybody. And I think you guys love to, you know, just put that forefront, and that's really important. So now thank you guys for doing the stuff that you're doing. Please keep doing it. So yeah, thanks guys.
Thank you, Brad.
I'm excited for the four of us to link up at some point.
Yeah, and Bradford and I, like, we have like work to do. Like, apparently, he's got emails to write from March.
Yeah,
you got some thank you notes. You got some thank you notes to write.
Yeah, I do. I do have thank you notes to write. But no, thank you guys so much for having me. Seriously, I'm humbled about the nice remark. So let's just keep it rocking.